the American Association of Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, or ASECT, is a leading organization exploring and advocating for best practices in sex therapy. ASECT believes in, quote, the fundamental value of sexuality as an inherent, essential, and beneficial dimension of being human. It's a fantastic organization for clinicians who want to support clients in their pursuit of sexual health and freedom. ASECT believes therapists have an ethical responsibility to provide culturally humble care, especially to marginalized clients, including those who are sexually diverse and kinky. Among other certifications, ASECT certifies sex therapists. Dr. Heather Sexton is one of these certified sex therapists. Here she is talking about her decision to pursue advanced training in the area.
Okay, so I think for a lot of clinicians, there might just be like a little embarrassment potentially around the topic of sex therapy. Was that easy to kind of come out of that shell as you develop this niche?
Yes and no. I think because like in the sex therapy, like any other like therapeutic orientation, or like most of them now have like this whole certification, like EMDR and all these things, you can like go down this whole certification path. For sex therapy, like ASECT kind of oversees who's certified, and like you don't have to get certification to do sex therapy. Like in most states, I think except for Florida, there may be more now, but you just have to have like training and competency, like any other thing that you treat. But like what was appealing about like going the ASECT certification route as a part of that process is supervision and all of these areas that they have, they want you to get training in, and you can start, which I ended up ending my experience with something called a SAR, which is like a sexual attitude reassessment. So essentially it's like trying to desensitize you, and it would have been probably more beneficial if I'd done it at the beginning, but doing it at the end was interesting too. But it's like it's like a group therapy experience over the course of like a weekend. I think it has to be like 10 or 16 hours or something. And you have other therapists that are like, you know, working on the certification, and you are all watching the most obscure pornography imaginable, and then processing like what came up for you as you saw what you watched. So it was like, you know, really sitting with like judgments that you have, or like also learning like, wow, there are so many things out there, you know, that not solo on your own, you may not go down that rabbit hole. But like seeing all of the things that are out there, and like being able to process, you know, because like, and the one I attended, and then you have to continue to do this over the years as you maintain certification. But like a lot of, we watched some consensual non-consent, which is like, you know, it looks like it's non-consensual, but it is consensual. And so like watching that as therapists, a lot of people had things that come up, and like just being able to see and like process and really like look at your own judgments and like your own stuff was such a cool experience in the sexual realm. But also I feel like, I mean, probably would be a beneficial experience just as a therapist in general for lots of different things. But that's like one of the means of like being comfortable and like desensitizing yourself almost that you do.
So, I mean, to me, I'm like, that sounds like it would work. I mean, did you feel like after that, that embarrassment did subside a little bit?
Yeah. So I did it at the end, which most of the people in the SAR that I participated in was just starting, like they had maybe only had one or two courses. So like desensitizing, yes, but then also I'd been seeing clients for a bit. I was like finished with all of the training courses that I needed to have and had supervision. So like desensitizing myself, and then also like seeing how I felt with like other therapists passing judgment and like what that felt like for me. So there was like a lot of layers to the experience. And then also like genuinely, I can say in therapy, you can tell me whatever, and like I've seen some stuff. I will not judge you. Like, they're, you know, the people who hold the SARS, they find some really obscure things. I will not yuck anyone's yum.
My name is Tobin Richardson. I'm a counselor educator with the vision to save the therapist by creating a forever free podcast style platform designed for learning. Here, digging into all things kink-informed care, primarily by talking to clinicians who provide this type of care daily in their clinical work. Up next, you'll hear from Ruby Bowie Johnson, who understands the specialized needs of this population and has a lot of insight and how all therapists can incorporate aspects of kink-informed care into their clinical work. Here she is.
It's just, I fell into sex therapy, kind of. When I say I fell into it is when I was doing my my LCSW and my supervision, I started in a group practice, and it's like the largest LGBT practice in Dallas. I'm in the DFW area, and in working with it, the owner of the practice kind of introduced me into various types of, you know, this is what you need to have information about, this is what you need. And so me being a Black woman, I started, you know, and I was the only Black provider in the practice at that time. He was sending certain, primarily the Black clients to me, because that's the choice that they were making, right? They wanted someone that looked like them. And in the process of doing that, I started to find that there's a lot that I didn't have on board when it comes to sex positivity, you know, how you can easily just pathologize sex. And so that led to my journey with ASECT, which is one of the credentialing bodies for sex therapy, and my journey just in getting involved in that way. So
did you feel like you just naturally had an inclination to be pretty comfortable diving into that? Or did you find yourself kind of having to like get over a barrier to talk about this thing that like we're not supposed to talk about in society?
You know, for me personally, I've been pretty comfortable talking about sex, and I give all credit to my mom. She was talking to me about sex since age 13. You know, it's something she talked to me about masturbation and stuff like that, just everything. And so me being comfortable and with discourse on sexuality and sex and what you enjoy and stuff like that with friends and stuff has always been very comfortable. Now, fast forward to clients and talking to clients about it, I can say that me talking to clients about it and it being a part of the assessment process, me getting to know them and all of that didn't start until my education about 2014, 2015. Me being comfortable with clients bringing it up and them like asking, is it okay? That was something that was always, you know, was not anything that I was repelled by. It's just been a comfort level I've had since I was a teenager. 80% of my practice are people who are queer, who are, you know, trans or non-binary, people who are kinky, poly, and folks of color. And so that's a big piece of my practice. And so sexuality is just a part of it, especially in the South, you know, with where we're at, there's like, you know, our educational system here, it's not even part of the sexual curriculum. They're like, we don't want to talk about LGBT issues and we don't want to talk about that. So yes, we not only talk about it from the standpoint of their struggles within themselves and within their relationships, but society as a whole.
How would you define a client within the kink community?
Yes.
How would you, like, what's your conceptualization of that term, I guess?
I think for me, kink is anything that is viewed outside of what the norm of procreative sex can look like, right? and when I say that, I'm not saying that someone who is having non-procreative sex, like maybe, you know, anyone who's what we call same gender loving, right? You know, that falls into that realm, but it's those things that are outside of what is considered the norm. That includes fetishes, that includes BDSM. That is what I call kink, you know? And so when I tell a client comes up to me and it's like, well, I like being choked a little bit. I don't like my butt spanked. Oh, I said, oh, you got a little kink in you. Kink, that's kink. I was like, oh yeah, that's called spanking. That's called breath play. You know, and so that is it. And so I like to put it that way, number one, because it's disarming, because people have such a strange connotation of 50 Shades of Grey, you know, or there's the new movie out with Nicole Kidman right now, Baby Girl. Of what it's supposed to look like, and they have these extreme notions, you know, but it's just a little bit of, you know, a little bondage. Put those fuzzy handcuffs on you, and that's a little kinky.
Do you feel like, because obviously there's still, I'm sure you would know better than me, but your clients are still feeling a lot of, may feel like some shame or embarrassment around those preferences. Do you feel like those have changed over the course of your career? I'm curious, like with things like 50 Shades of Grey, do you feel like there's been some more mainstream acceptance, or are your clients still often up against like a stigma?
Yeah, I think that there has been a little more representation. I think the representation is great, like with movies that are out there making it mainstream, making it conversations, you know, after 50 Shades of Grey, there's like 1 billion searches for kink related things came up fairly quickly after that movie was released. And so I believe that it has become more of a part of the discourse. I still believe that there is a lot of pathologizing, or when I say that, is that people want to say that there's something wrong with you. If you like this, there's something wrong with you. So yes, we still come in, I still have it in my office from people, you know, in their 30s, 40s and up who are like, I like this, you know, and I want to tell my partner that I like this. So how do I tell them that I want them to put on this rubber suit and walk around, right? And I was like, well, we're going to have conversations. And we said, so I'm like, so what inside of you are you feeling this? Because we have what is supposed to be normal sexual desire and what turns you on. And then you have the stuff that you don't talk about that turns you on and sexual desire, and is making that present when everything in society is telling you, no, you're not supposed to like that. Those are the conversations that I have a lot in my office, is, you know, deconstructing what society tells you and rebuilding what you are telling you that you enjoy. I remember the moment when I was watching a movie with my mom, and I was like, what, 16, 17 years old. My mom, though, I just praised her for her sex positivity and talking about sex with her teenage daughter. However, you know, when there was another woman kissing another woman on a movie, she went like, ooh, yuck. That was a message that landed, you know? And so those are the types of messaging that we have to, you know, in therapy, unpack.
Does most sex therapy, in your experience, happen in the context of like couples therapy, where these conversations are happening like amongst partners in the room, whereas a lot of this happening in individual therapy?
I say it's about 50-50. It's not unusual for a client, and this happens a lot more these days. I'm getting more clients, and this started in the pandemic, coming to me because they had been isolated for a certain amount of time, and say they were using sex workers, or they were getting their desires met in other ways that they couldn't get necessarily met now if with the pandemic. And so they were, you know, doing more virtual stuff. And so they were starting to explore many aspects about themselves because they were in isolation. And so there was an uptick in individuals coming and talking about their sexual desires and their fetishes and their kinks during the pandemic on an individual level. And then the uptick with people within partnerships started coming because they're like, we're spending all this time together and now we want to just spice it up a little bit. And so we need a toolkit, and or we need to know how to do this, and or we need to be able to explore this. And so that's when that came, when people wanting to be more creative and introduce new things into the bedroom. And so that was an aspect of it. And then there's aspects of partners discovering that their person did have these kinks and things they were doing as solo practitioners. That's what I call it, like a by themselves. that they were doing by themselves, and maybe a partner walked in on them. I didn't know that he masturbated, or I didn't know that she masturbated, and they walk in on their partner. And so now we have to, and then they masturbate with, you know, a butt plug or a vibrator or anything like that. When did that become a thing? And so things were just starting to expose. So there was an uptick in stuff like that.
Is there a time, or when is the time, when you would suggest a therapist, like referring out to maybe a sex therapist or a therapist who is very comfortable talking about that?
If you feel that you have come up against your limitation, and that is the most loving thing you can do for a client. I'm still working with this couple where their therapist told them, you know, he was had a particular kink that involved pegging and dressing, feminization, and his wife discovered it during the pandemic. And so with that client, what they were told to do was to expose her to this continuously over and over again, exposure therapy in a way, just keep doing it until she gets comfortable. It created so much damage to her. It was very traumatic for her, very overwhelming for her. And then it was very traumatic for him, and it caused a huge, huge rift in their relationship. And so those are that's an example of something that where this wasn't a sex therapist, this wasn't a clinician who was trained in it and did not recognize that that wasn't the best and most healthy suggestion to offer the client. And that's where you have to be very careful. Are you going to make recommendations that are so outside of your box that it can cause harm? And so, yeah, they have to have that kind of figure that out. It's okay to refer out. And it doesn't mean that you're any less of a therapist. It's not about an ego thing. Even though I'm a sex therapist, I have a client that I just recently referred out who's having a double mastectomy. And there's hormonal changes and et cetera. And she's concerned with how it's going to affect her sexuality and who she is. And I know a colleague of mine who this is their jam. This is what they do. I referred her out, right? Because it's not necessarily my jam and what I do. This would be the first time I would be faced with a client at this stage of their cancer treatment and what they're doing and how that's going to impact their sexuality and who they are. Sometimes clients, you'll be working with a couple, right? Or in they have all of these ongoing issues, and there hasn't been an assessment done on their erotic health within their relationship, the sexual health within their relationship. There hadn't been a sexual history done at all because they're not talking about it. So they're not discussing it. So they don't know to bring it to their therapist to talk about it. We're so conditioned that we don't talk about it in public and how sexuality can impact communication, satisfaction, how you view a person. You know, the neurochemicals of connection need physical touch, you know, an experience to flow, and that helps the health of a relationship. But if you have no physical, I'm not talking, you know, sexual is big, from there's non-sexual touch, you know, to laughing together, flirting, just having fun together. If none of that is happening, that impacts how you perceive and how you interact and how you are with the person that you're in partnership with. So, but if the therapist doesn't know to have that conversation, and then if you do bring it up, you discover, oh, it stopped because I discovered X, Y, and Z that my partner liked and it turned me off. And then you're unfamiliar with that and be like, oh, that makes sense that that turned you off. And you say that one thing like that or something like that, that can be detrimental right there. Because now to have an expert, a mental health professional confirming, yeah, that is supposed to turn you off, you know. And sometimes that can be the one little slip that can happen. But coming into a SAR and talking about sexual discourse and, you know, talking about intersectionality around who has the right to have sexual desire, who has the right to have sex, having those conversations will be so beneficial to you as a clinician.
What advice do you have to a clinician who's worried that they have made a mistake? Maybe they're listening to this piece because they don't like the way that they've responded to a client who's brought up a kink that they have in session, and they're trying to figure out how to then like repair potentially the relationship. Like, what would you suggest to a person in that situation?
Oh, you said it beautifully. I don't think you answered your question so well. You said repair. Right. And those of us as clinicians recognize the importance of acknowledgement of pain, because that's the repair process, right? The first step is you acknowledge what happened, acknowledge what you did, and this is what I'm going to do to make it better. Because I've done it. You know, I've misgendered a client, something to that effect. I called it out immediately. Right. And I did it in the moment because I felt it. And as therapists, we can feel it because we can see the client's face. We can see their energy shift. And they're like, okay, I just felt something. I said something that was uncomfortable or hurtful. I'm going to make it present. I want to talk about it. And then that opens up that particular dialogue. And so that repair process is absolutely important. It doesn't have to mean the relationship has to end. It can just strengthen the relationship even more. Oh, I can call out my therapist when they say something hurtful. But the therapist has to have the courage to recognize they made a mistake. And the humility, that's the word you used before, and the humility to say, I messed up.
Yeah.
I messed up. Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And it's not easy to do, you know. I love, like, I feel like we've all been there. It's like,
I've been there a lot.
Oh, yeah. Me too. And it's, you know, we also have our own, like, messages as therapists about, like, being perfect, you know, and like, it can feel like a lot of pressure. And I think sometimes that's what people are scared to acknowledge when a mistake comes up. But I love the way that you can actually, it sounds like the way you've actually approached that in the past is like as a therapeutic moment itself to demonstrate that like it's okay to explore when a mistake takes place or something hurtful happens. Mm-hmm. What a like a relief of pressure off of your shoulders if you can frame, I think, like sex therapy or, you know, kink-informed therapy, mm-hmm. in through a lens of, it doesn't mean you're perfect. It doesn't mean you know everything. It means that you're trying to be informed and willing to acknowledge if there is a time that you mess up.
Oh, and it happens so much, Tobin. It happens even with the most seasoned professional. It happens with Esther Perel, you know? It happens with therapists, and that's that kind of therapist self-work to get with, you know? If anything, I could suggest to someone who's going to be doing sex therapy and doing their work, their stuff will come up. I have a therapist, right? I journal. I have consultation groups. I have colleagues that I talk to, because my stuff will come up. The transference will happen. And so it's important for me to surround myself with other humble therapists who recognize that I'm only as good as the work that I do with myself. As a therapist, if I have sexual biases, and I know I have sexual biases, I need to work with around those sexual biases. Does that mean I have to work with a client to test myself to see where I'm at? Absolutely not. But I need to be able to hear that client when they say, oh, this is what's happening, but I know, oh, that's going to sit on my stuff. Because there's many clients who have been victims of therapists who have experienced sexual abuse, right? And so they recognize within themselves they can't work with a MAP, a minor attracted person, as a therapist, or a non-offending pedophile, whatever language that you want to use. And so they recognize that within themselves, but they need to be able to hear that, not shame this person, and then tell that and refer out to somebody else who can work with that particular client base. But the way that I work on how I respond and what's happening inside of my body is I do my own personal work.
Anything else that you think it's important for a non-sex therapist, but a therapist, mm-hmm. to know about kink-informed care that we haven't touched on?
Yes. I think it's really important that any therapist recognize, because someone is kinky, because they enjoy being tied up, because they enjoy being spanked or a little hot wax, doesn't mean that it's a trauma reenactment. Okay. That's number one. I highly encourage any budding sex therapist to educate themselves. You don't necessarily get it in school, but the true education is going to come from what you do on your own and become your own lifelong self-learner, right? Recognize that there's not really experts necessarily in any of it. The client is the expert in their own life. And ultimately, we are accountable to the client. And so, yeah, that's it.
Kink-informed care involves providing a space where clients feel respected and understood and empowered to explore their sexual identity without fear of discrimination or judgment. It requires an appreciation of autonomy and consent and being aware of intersectionality and addressing of stigma and shame, but also just continued learning. The field of kink is broad and evolving, with new practices and dynamics and discussions emerging all the time. So keep an open mind and remain curious and supportive, and your kinky clients will appreciate it.